Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Hello, it's Alice Arnold here. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. This week we are talking to some of the cast of one of my absolute favourite new musicals. The musical is Come From Away, and the cast members are Robert Hands, Clive Carter and Rachel Tucker. It's a rainy lunchtime, and here we are in the Ambassador's Lounge, thinking we might help ourselves to a little whiskey.
Get me through the matter, man.
And I just walked across the back of the stage, and I thought, this is as close as I'm going to get to being in this production of Come From Away, which I have to say is my favourite play this year.
Oh, so good. Far.
I mean, what... I just absolutely love it. It's such a joy. It must be a complete joy to be in it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it took about 6 weeks to get through without crying, because it's so moving, the whole thing.
I know, but in a good way.
Yeah, in a really good way. Yeah. It's so lovely. About kindness, really.
It is. I mean, we should set it up, I suppose, because I'm going to talk to several of the, your cast, and the people will be going, what is this play? So will you set it up? Set it up for me, just in a nutshell.
It's about the kindness of a community, that they showed, I mean, way beyond the call of any, way beyond any normal kindness. When a disaster happened, it was 9/11, and 7,000 people descended on a tiny, tiny community in Canada, and they opened their doors to them. To get choked up talking about it. They didn't have hotels, they didn't have anywhere to put them. It doubled their population virtually. And they just took them into their homes, and they fed them, and they clothed them, and they counselled them, and they didn't have that much to give, and what they had, they gave. You know, they put them in their spare rooms on their sofas, and they let them have their showers, and they were exemplary human beings.
And what's lovely about it is a lot of that there are 12 in the cast, and you play passengers who've come from the play, and also people from the town of Gander.
That's right.
Yeah. So you double up. Yes. Everybody doubles up the parts seamlessly, with just like a hat or something. It's not like major costume changes,
no,
really.
Absolutely.
It's just very, very simple. It's just chairs. Basically, the set is a load of chairs, which can become aeroplane seats or the mayor's office or a cafe or whatever it is. But the individual stories are so poignant, and you play... the love story of the piece,
yeah,
I suppose. Based on truth, isn't it?
Yeah, my romantic lead days were over, but everything in the play is true. So there are all sorts of interesting facts that sound like they might not be true. Everything is true. They haven't invented anything. All the characters are true. They all really existed. My character, I play two, but the love interest character... was a 52-year-old businessman who was commuting to America backwards and forwards. He worked for an oil company, and there's a sort of sense that he's a divorcee, and that part of his life was sort of over for him. And he meets that he's thrown together with a Texan lady during this process. They're there for 5 days. And they fall in love, and they totally fall in love. And to this day, 18 years later, because I've met them.
Oh, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Did they come and see the show then?
They've been over 100 times.
No.
And they're very into it. It's like a sort of testament to their relationship. And so he, in fact, contacted me on Facebook before I started rehearsals. So once I'd been cast and the cast was announced, he got in touch with me, and we had several long chats on Messenger or whatever it was, or one of those things, and talking, and he's sweet, really, really sweet. He's
and now I suppose he's 70, is he or is, would be
he's 60, and Diane is
he's
70, yeah, he's 70, and she's yes, that's yeah. right, yes. I think. Yes. Yes, I think he's 70. If I'm doing... I'm sorry, Nick, if I'm got that wrong. But I think that's right. If he was... That's 18 years ago.
If he was 52.
That would make sense. And he was.
Yes.
Unless he was 50, in which case he'd be 68.
60, yes.
Really good at maths, isn't he?
Yes, Robert Hans... Yeah. Mathematician. Maybe not. That's why you're an actor.
An actor. And they're very sort of engaged with it, and they talk about it. They're very much part of the thing. And when the new productions open, so there's five productions of this now, and the worldwide, they're always there. They're always there, and they were brought on stage after.
So they're the sort of core, a couple of the core people that are involved.
Yeah. Well, actually, a lot of them come over. Because it's. It makes it all the more poignant when they go, oh my God, they're real. Yeah. They absolutely are real. It's not invented. But what I really love about them as a couple is that 18 years later, they can't keep their hands off each other. They really can't. They're holding hands. He's got his arm around her. They're very, very tactile couple and very, a very together couple.
Well, you see, in the piece, when you go and watch it, you know when you start rooting for a love thing to happen... I mean, everyone is rooting for you. Like, there's no tomorrow. It's like, oh, please, please kiss her. Please, please. Because it's, because it's so sweet and genuine and lovely, and you just think, this has got to happen. Please let it happen.
Sometimes that first kiss, I hear a, oh.
I'm surprised you don't hear a cheer, actually. I'm surprised everyone doesn't just get up and go, way. And Robert, you were nominated for an Olivier Award for Best Supporting Actor, and in fact, Come From Away got 7 nominations, I think.
Nine.
Was it 9 nominations?
And 4 wins.
And won 4. So you've got to be pretty pleased. Did you have a good party at the end of that?
Oh God, yes, it was.
Like, I bet you did.
It was the nicest thing that's ever happened to me. Really, I'll never forget it. I never expected it, and it was as nice as you could possibly wish.
I mean, I think what's lovely about this piece is it's very intimate. It's very sort of off Broadway, off West End type thing. Really, it's small and it's intimate. And
it doesn't have helicopters
and ensemble,
flying
and there's no helicopters. But it's a massive hit everywhere that it is. And it must just feel wonderful to be part of something that's so kind of solid and family-like, and yet is a huge hit.
No. The thing of being in a hit is, well, you it's nothing to do with me. I know it's nothing to do with me because it's a hit wherever it is without me. But it's so nice to be a part of.
Yeah.
Just really lovely. Yeah. I mean, I do my bit, but as I say.
And when you did audition for it, did you know about the other productions? Had you heard about it? Were you...
My friend's wife had seen it on Broadway.
Right.
And he described it to me. I thought, really? Mm. And then I got this audition through. So I phoned him. I said, oh, you know that thing your wife saw? I've got an audition for it. But that's all I knew about it.
Literally?
Yeah. I didn't know about the story of Gander. I didn't know that this thing had happened.
And when you knew that it was in Canada, were you expecting to do an Irish accent?
Now, it's not an Irish accent.
Oh,
actually.
Pardon me.
No, but you're right. It bears a lot of similarities. Yes, the accent's quite something. And
it's a complete surprise to the audience, I think, when they first hear it, because they think, well, this is set in Canada. How come these people are speaking ostensibly a Southern Irish accent?
Yeah.
Which is, but that's big. Well, now the stage is collapsing, the sound effects. But presumably because it was inhabited by... And it's an island, isn't it? It was very isolated from the rest of Canada.
Which is why even different parts of Newfoundland have different accents.
Because there's a lot of Scottish influence in Canada
there is,
as well.
Apparently it's very, very regional. So you can travel... You know, a few miles down the road, and people speak in a totally different way. And because we met these people, because they've all been over, they all seem to speak differently, and they all sound like they've got it slightly wrong as well. Which is sort of, but there are some hard and fast rules that you hold on to. But
which what? What are the rules?
They don't have diphthongs, so they wouldn't say plain; they'd say plen, and they wouldn't say I don't know, night, let's say night. Sort of little things like that you can hang on to.
Mm.
But we were told to think of it as a North American accent with Irish bits rather than an Irish accent with North American bits.
Okay. Okay, and presumably you all had a lot of voice coaching
for it. Yeah, we did. We had, and we still do, I have to say.
Yeah.
Because the voice coach, who coaches all the productions worldwide, which is probably a good thing, he periodically listens to the show and then they send him a recording of it, and then because he lives in America, he then notes it, and then you have these rather grueling FaceTime sessions with him as he talks us through it.
Gosh, so they're keeping you on it all the way through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, of course, we wouldn't know. Not many people know people who come from Gander, so it's not the audience are not really
judging. There's only 7,000 or 9,000 of them, so, yes, no.
Have you got any inclination to go there?
A little bit.
We
yeah.
do. After the show, we said, let's go for our next holiday.
Yeah, really, yeah. No,
I don't know what's there, though. Not much.
Nothing's there. I mean, still nothing's there. But it has become a slight thing. It's become a
destination. They'll probably get tourists now, like Downton Abbey does.
Yes, I think
people will go to see Gander. The economy will flourish.
I hope
in ways they never expected.
Because you can't grow anything there. It's quite barren.
Oh, okay. And cold, probably. Is it cold?
Yeah. There's no real industry. A bit of fishing. So, you know, it is sort of quite sparsely populated, and that's why they're such a fantastic community. And they seem to shrug and kind of say, well, that's what you do, isn't it? They tend to have quite a sort of wry sense of humour. One of the ladies, the lady that, in this show, there's a character called Beulah Davis, and she's actually a conflation of two people, of Diane Davis and another lady whose name escapes me. And Diane Davis is hilarious, and she says, I only did it so they make a Broadway musical out of it. Which, you know, it isn't true at all. When she was over here in London, she said, I've got to go back because I've got some Syrian refugees in my house at the moment.
Right.
That's what she does, you know. It's what
she does, seriously? She
look,
did
yeah,
have...
Yeah, they look after people, it seems to be.
Well, because I think that's the sort of resonance of it today, is that in a time of politics, which sometimes doesn't feel incredibly welcoming, we're watching a show about the exact antipathy of that, which is people welcoming strangers. And that's the essence of the whole piece, isn't it?
Yes.
Which is, and maybe people from a small town are more ready to do that than people from big cities, I don't know.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right. I think you're right. The bigger the city, the more suspicion there is, isn't there? You don't know anyone.
And it was in terrible circumstances, of course, that everybody arrived. But that's not what the piece is about. It's that sort of incidental. It's these people had to be here because of that. Because Gander had this enormous airport,
we
should add.
Yes.
Because it was the place where all the planes refuelled before they went on to America.
That's right.
So they couldn't do it in one go at that. Whatever time that...
They landed at 38 planes there, which you... When all those planes were in the air, that must have been a godsend. But they obviously didn't think about where will they all go.
Yeah.
But I guess no one knew how long it was going to last or how long it was going to be. I mean, they sat there on the ground. They were in the planes for 24 hours, most of them. Because they were, you know, their outward journey started and then they landed and then no one knew what to do. It took some time before they were actually on the ground. And then they got themselves together and they just did it. They just looked after them.
Well, it's obviously set to run and run and run with you.
I hope so.
I hope.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So,
from your mouth to God's ears, my grandmother would say. Yes.
I need to come again because I've only seen it once. And once is not enough.
Good.
To come from away, I think. It's one of those shows you do need to see more than once.
Like anyway. Nick and Diane come 120 times.
Yeah. Well, maybe not 120, but as many as I can. Anyway, thank you, Robert,
so much for chatting
to us. And have a lovely matinee and evening show.
Will do. Thank you. Yeah. Cheers. Bye.
I'm talking to Clive Carter. We've probably come in the middle of this conversation. Oh, we're still in the Ambassador's Lounge of the Phoenix Theatre. Come from away.
Back to what we're supposed to be talking
you
about.
You play the mayor of the town. Yes. In fact, you sort of open the whole show.
Yeah.
Piece about the mayor of the town. There's a bus strike or something going on, isn't
there? Oh, that's
there?
Right. The school bus strike.
The school bus strike.
Which went on, which was actually
major
going on.
Issue. In
Absolutely. Which is for them.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it was. So are you like an organizer in you're kind of the hub of the company in a way, because it's you're the leader of the town.
It is, yeah, he is, Claude.
And are you the leader of the company?
I think people look at me as the leader of the company. Also, because I am, to be fair, I am the oldest of the company.
The father of the... You need everybody...
Well, better known as the old fart of the company.
Right.
I think I do... people say you lead the company, and I'm very happy to do
that. You do.
I mean, we're very lucky because it's a really close company, which helps so much with this production.
Now, you can feel that, though, when you watch it. It's quite obvious.
Yeah, I mean, we all support
it. I don't know how you'd do it if it wasn't, actually.
I know, you're absolutely... Because if there's a chair in the wrong place or something, there's always someone who's going to watch your back.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. And there's no room for egos in this show. Leave your ego at the stage door. There's no room for it.
No, well, it is... It's just such an ensemble.
It is.
That's why
really
I loved it so much, actually.
Yeah,
because it's just...
It.
I just... When it finished, I want to be in that, because... Because of that, of the company feeling that there is with the music and the choreography, and it's just, you're right, there's no single star, it's just a company piece and about a lovely group of people.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? We're talking about an amazing group of people who did something so fantastic when, I mean, I always describe this as, you know, when the world was going nuts, this tiny little place in the middle of nowhere, nobody ever heard of, showed the rest of the world how to behave and continue to do so. They still don't get what the fuss is about. They still don't get it. Beulah, the real Beulah, is everyone's favourite grandmother. I just fell in love with her. Because we opened in Ireland first of all. Mm-hmm. She came to Ireland. And
I hear they all come to, quite a lot of them
come. Yeah, they
to
do.
Is the mayor, does he
Claude.
Still?
Claude, yes.
Is he still?
Yes.
Because he must have been, what age was he?
Well,
when he was mayor, was he a young?
Well, he's about a year younger than me, actually.
Oh, okay.
But no, Claude's lovely. He's a natural comedian. When I was doing research for this, I was watching stuff about Claude and these very professional interviewers trying to take charge. Forget it, Claude. You haven't got it. I mean, if you interviewed Claude, you'd put your microphone down, and he asks all the questions and answers them. He's wonderful. He's fantastic. But he goes everywhere. And the other lovely thing about Claude is, like all of them, they invite you back to Newfoundland, to Gander. They say, come to Gander.
Well, I was asking Robert, I said, have you been? Do you want to go?
I do now, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, and the invitations that you get, not only the cast, but on the opening night, when Claude did this curtain speech, he invited every member of the public, everybody in the audience, to come to Gander.
What, stay in his house?
To come and stay. But he said, no, I'll find the accommodation for you, and he would. And just to solidify that, he left a wad of business cards of his address. If anybody wants to, just hand them out to whoever wants the audience. I mean, that's the kind of people they are.
It's probably ironically quite hard to get a flight to Gander, isn't it?
Well, I think it is now. I mean, they now have a big tourist industry, which they didn't have before. And the airport, which they supposed to have knocked down years ago, they can't now.
It's up and running.
Want to go
it's got
the
big duty free section now. Yeah. Get your checked shirt.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, the whole thing is extraordinary. The show is 1 hour 40 minutes without an interval, and we described it as like getting on a train that just doesn't
good
stop.
Description. Yeah.
And it just goes
hurtling
thundering through for the whole time, and there isn't a minute that you think, I wish there was an interval. I love it, actually, that there's no interval. It just drives on through. And that's the same in every production, I presume, because there are lots of people.
Oh, there's no interval in any production. They did try, I think, originally in Canada when they first started doing it. They put an interval in, but it doesn't work. The thing is, we take the audience on the same journey that those plain people. Mm-hmm. You are the come from aways. So, and one of the things I say, it's hard to understand the accent. You probably understand about half of what we say. But what happens, your ear gets tuned, and so you can't have that break. You need to take the audience with you right to the end of the journey. So we take you on that 5 days journey.
Mm. And it feels like, I think that's why you get just so involved with the people, because there is no break, and you just follow their journey through. Now, you're no stranger to the musical theatre world, because you've done
been around the block a few times. Blimey. Yeah, I've been at it since 1840, I think.
That's a while. No wonder that mayor is younger than you. But is this one of your favourites, do you think, would you say?
Yeah, I think the reason being is the ensemble. The fact that there is no star in this. I mean, everyone on that stage can play a lead in their own right, every one of them. But to get a company like that together to play ensemble, first of all, is quite rare. But because the way the company works, because I said, you know, we all get on incredibly well, which is fantastic. That's what makes it so special. And also, because we're playing real people, you know, and I love research. Mm. I've always loved research. So to do research for this was kind of easy because they're real people. The only one I couldn't do research for enough was, you know, the Jewish chap. There's the, mm-hmm. you know, there's the Jewish chap who admits that he's a Jew in the piece.
Yes.
Which I do. And I got a lot of information from the actual rabbi. I met the rabbi. I think he comes from Birmingham.
Right.
And we had a long chat. I got so much information out of him because nobody ever saw that Jewish guy again. Nobody ever found him. They didn't know what happened to him.
Oh, right. Well, I suppose there are bound to be some people that
That was such an incredible story that he was probably about 86, 87, and he'd kept that secret till he was years old till then. Hadn't told anybody, even his wife.
But that's the wonderful thing about the piece is it's in the light of a terrorist attack. It's everybody's stories, which are different stories of persecution, of discrimination, of all of those things, isn't it? Which is,
I think, the loveliest thing about this, though. It's nice to know that something so tragic and so horrific happened, something so wonderful came out of it.
Mm.
And that's the story of Come From Away.
Well, that's why everybody loves to see it. And when you tell people the premise of the piece, they go, oh, wow, that sounds amazing, because it's not about 9/11 at all.
No, it's not at all.
And as soon as you say what it is, as soon as I heard the premise of the piece, I thought, wow, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. And I love the Irish music feeling, the barons and the rhythm and the, you know,
I know, it's great. That really drives the audience. All love that. We love that, because invariably, a lot of the times, we don't bother leaving the stage. We go back on to listen to the music. Mm. Because it's wonderful.
I'm doing that. Robert said I could do that this afternoon. So if you see a strange figure just sitting on a chair somewhere.
Having a jig.
I think if I just took the jumper off, I think I could blend in.
You get
in.
Away with it. You get away with it. Nobody will say anything. It's fine.
Clive, thank you so much for talking to us. I'll see you later.
All right, I'll see you on the stage.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Rachel Tucker, my third cast member from Come From Away that I'm talking to. Now, you play Beverly Bass.
That's right.
Beverly Bass is an extraordinary person. She was the first ever female pilot to be made a captain by American Airlines.
Right, that's right.
Can you believe that?
It's incredible, and that was in 1986.
Yeah.
It's pretty shocking that was the first female ever to fly for American Airlines. And she wanted to fly from, she was like eight years old, she knew it. She was on a mission, and it was a dream job of hers, and she's still flying today.
Is she?
She is.
See, I love hearing about the real people and what they're still doing.
It's incredible.
It's amazing.
She's not so much for like big charter airlines, it's more VIPs across America. So
sort of people that come into the ambassador's lounge, they're sitting in
like
the thing.
This is
the elite place for the posh people
room.
Come during the interval. So she flies them around.
Yes,
that's amazing. And she came. Did she come to London?
She came to London and Dublin. So yeah. She's been in total. Beverly, I think, seen it the most.
Her
husband Tom have flown across the world to see three or four various productions of Come From Away, and they've been a total of 137 times.
Right, okay, yes. I think that beats, what did Robert say, his person to come, 120,
yes,
I think.
Or go, something like that. They love it. And we love having them in the audience. It's such a, you know, it gets the crowd going, because usually she introduces herself to people around her, lets people know that she's in. And they love it. The audience absolutely love it.
Well, they're stars for the night.
Celebrities have come from away.
Now, we can't not notice that you have a Belfast.
Yes.
Northern Irish accent. Which you'd think, but that's the wrong one for Come From Away, because that's more like Southern Irish, although I've been told it's not. It's North American with Irish.
It is. It's a real mix. And I read up about this last night from the famine. It was about in the 1500s.
Okay.
A lot of Irish left, and it was their first island they hit off the boats. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, it's land, they stay, they make there. And then with these huge, heavy winters that Canada get, they very much more or less are snowed in for the winter. And so a lot of the Irish influence is like just sitting in the kitchen, playing music, keeping each other warm. And again, they're away from the mainland of Canada. So the Irish accent stayed, with just like an American Canadian twang.
And the Irish music.
And the Irish music. And they can all play. And they sound more Irish than me. Half of them.
Yeah.
You know.
Rachel, you've been in musical theatre all your life, basically.
More or less,
you were dead to age of nine,
yes,
I've got written in my notes.
9 years old, I started in cabaret with my dad around the clubs and pubs of Belfast, which he did with his dad at the age of six. So it was very, very much, I mean, nowadays, I don't think, I wouldn't take my six-year-old son around clubs, but back then it was okay, very, especially in dad's age. Mm-hmm. He literally sang for his supper. He's called Tommy Tucker, and he sang for his supper. They passed the hat round, and that's how they made money. And
that was during the Troubles as well.
Well,
wasn't
for
it?
Me, yes, but it was during the Troubles. Yeah, and I mean, it was just something that was an okay thing to do, and I kind of learned my trade there and learned how to work an audience and a crowd and what songs to sing and you know what key to sing it in. And so it's definitely helped me in good stead.
Mm. And you just got used to troops in vehicles pointing their guns.
Yeah. I mean, when I came to London, I my friend was
surprised.
Because
that's what it was like.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
I was there.
Absolutely.
And really, I mean, to live with it and grow up.
Yeah, I mean,
it
was the norm to me. Yeah. It was only when I came to London to go to college did I realise that an army is for a war zone. And my friend pointed that out to me. She was like, wow, the army's on the streets. And I was like, is that not normal? She was like, well, no, because it's not a war zone. And I was like, well, there you go. Look what I've grown up in, you know. But that, to me, was normal.
And then you did the I Do Anything competition.
Yes.
Looking for Nancy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Nancy, I Do Anything. I loved it. I had a great time
did
on that
you?
Show. I loved it. I mean, it was such a great showcase for where I was at in my career.
And is that why you did it? Because you already were a professional.
Yeah, I was.
So
I was
it wasn't
working
like
away.
You were
no.
pulled from nowhere to,
no.
to do it.
I was touring the UK. I'd met my husband on the UK's tour of Tommy. I did Tonight's the Night. I'd done, you know, a couple of things. And I just felt like I needed that extra bit of showcase light to open a few more doors for West. I really wanted West End. And it did. It did what I really wanted it to do. A lot of exposure, mm-hmm. you know, and I loved it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and now there seem to be quite a lot of these people from various, not so much that one, but from, well, because they don't do that one anymore, but from X Factor and things are quite a lot of those people
working in
working
theatre
in the West End.
Yeah.
Now, I mean.
Well, there's Samantha Barks who did it. She's playing Pretty Woman on Broadway.
Right.
Jessie Buckley is like this movie star now. You know, the people that these shows have and can.
There's the waitress,
Catherine McPhee,
and
Lucy
and the couple
Jones,
Luce Jones, and then there's two in the Dolly Parton.
That's right.
Oh, not two. There's one. I don't remember. But
I mean, but
anyway, you did it for a purpose,
and
the purpose worked, and you've got a great history with Wicked, of course.
Yeah,
is your big? Would you ever go back to that?
Well, maybe playing Madame Morrible, maybe one of the older witch. Give me a couple of years though. I don't think I would go back to play Elphaba again. I mean, it'll always be a massive part of my career and my heart. But I think I've hung my hat and my broom up for good with that room.
Okay.
But you never know. Maybe
and also, you were in Sting's musical.
Yes.
On Broadway.
On Broadway, I loved it.
Would you go back to Broadway? I mean, how was Broadway?
I loved it. It was amazing. I loved living in New York. Loved doing being part of that community over there. We hold green cards now, so our aim is to get back to New York. We would love.
But
I'd
you
love
could
to go
do
back.
This in New York.
Well, there
because
you go.
Wouldn't
would be nice.
Wouldn't that just be easy?
That would
you
be
know all the words and everything.
Perfect.
So it'd
just
be really
a shoe in.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that
who's
would
doing
be,
it?
Right.
Over there? Who is
Jean Colonna?
Right, she needs
the
to
original.
Stop. She needs to stop now.
Yes, I mean that's the ideal. That would be a lovely situation. But yeah, you know, we want to get back there eventually. Who knows with this show or something else, you know. Mm.
I wanted to ask you, I read an interview that you'd done with a fantastic expression that your mother had used, which was jump and a net will
appear.
That's
right. That's going to be my first tattoo.
I love that.
She just used to say, Rachel, do it. Just jump. Something's going to catch you. You'll be fine. Whatever it is, that's what you're supposed to land in. And my big one of that was actually leaving a contract. It was my first West End contract, which was We Will Rock You, just across the road. And instead of extending and staying on for another year, I jumped. I was afraid of being in a contract and the role of Elphaba in Wicked coming up. I would be devastated not to have been available to audition for the role. So my mum, I remember, said, "Just jump, leave work, and if it's meant to be, it's meant to be." So I did. So it's going to be my first tattoo.
And it was. Is it? Yes. Where are you going to have it?
I think on my arm somewhere, so I can see it.
Right. It's a
lovely phrase, right? That one. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
My
wise mother.
When one door shuts, it's shut.
That's a good one. It's shut.
Yeah.
Do it like behind you. Open the next one.
Complete opposite. Yeah.
That's
hilarious. Move on.
Oh, well.
All that, you know, if you keep trying, you'll get there eventually.
No, you won't.
Just move on.
Not only is it shut, it's locked. Yes.
So where do you think you might jump? Well, obviously, this is going to run and run and run. So
I think
it could be in this forever.
I think so.
I mean, it's not a niche show, isn't right. Become a culty show.
I mean, people,
especially with all the
back.
Olivier Award nomination. Yes, and it's not a want to see it once show.
No,
it's
you
want
to see
it
a couple of times. Yeah,
you do.
We've had a lot of return customers so far. Even, you know, it's people need to see it again. They've this yearning of just a euphoria when they come out of the theatre, of just feel good and want to talk to your neighbour, and people want to be kind to each other and pass on the good deeds. You know, it's a And not in a cheesy, corny way, just in a real, like, it hits you in the surplexes, I think, this show. And it's so realistic and real and honest. And
it's just lovely. And you do want to tell all your friends, go and see it, because you want everyone to share the experience that you've had.
I saw it on Broadway in September and was blown away by it, and was so happy that I was going to be part of the London cast.
Did you know that before
I
you
did,
saw
yes,
it?
Oh, I right, did, oh, perfect. Which was great.
Perfect.
You know, it was. So my husband and I were a bit tentative, you know, going, please let this be great, you know, and it was more than great. I was ugly crying and laughing at the end, you know, like, it was just such a euphoric feeling.
So when eventually you're 96 and this is wrapping up and you can't play pilot anymore, where would you think you might jump?
Where will I jump? Honestly, I'm yearning to get back to New York. Really craving. Yeah, yeah. My husband's there at the minute, actually, and just. I love London, and I've lived here 15 years. Most of my career's been here, but there's an energy in the community of in the theatre of New York over there that just it's so vibrant and so involving, and it does feel very community. And I love the city, love it.
Right. Well,
so maybe I'll jump there on whichever net catches me, whichever show catches me. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, well, Broadway again beckons.
Back to Broadway.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much for talking to us.
Kind.
Thank you for listening to the Magic Musicals and Theatre podcast with me, Alice Arnold. If you enjoyed it, then you can review it. Subscribe to the podcast. But we are going to have a little break for a few weeks. Meantime, why don't you just download some of the old episodes? They're really good. I hope you enjoy them.
Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country?
Get a new 2026 Subaru Forester with 1.9% APR financing for up to 63 months.
Easy to deal with, easy to get to. Byers Airport Subaru.
By the airport!
See dealer for details. Offer ends 3/31/26.